This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 88.3 FM up in Pontiac, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old Central Illinois. And if you would like more information about our station, you can go to our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Or you can call us at the station at 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. But if you go to our website, you'll get more information, and it also tells you there if you would like to make a donation. Remember that we're brought to you by you, and we are expanding. We have expanded up into Pontiac. We're trying to expand down into Lincoln. We're trying to reach over a million possible listeners, and so this is something you can help us with, and we would greatly appreciate that. I'm with my wife, Lynn, today. We hope we have a great show for you. Coming up in the future here in the latter part of January, starting in February, the new year, we're going to go back to doing some regular catechesis. We'll talk about how we got the Bible. We'll talk about some of the Catholic dogmas, apologetics, and how to defend our faith. We're going to try to have some guest speakers on for you as well and do some current events. But before we get into that, I'm sorry to say the scandal in the church, of course, is going on. And there have been some articles in the Catholic Register that I would like to read a little bit and explain. And there's another article that's been put out by Kim Daniels. She's the Associate Director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought and Public Life at Georgetown University. She's a member of the Vatican Dicastery for Communications. And, of course, if you've been reading, there has been a shakeup in the Dicastery for Communication. A couple of people there have resigned. So there are some things, I think, that need to be addressed. And I know some of it is being addressed on a more national or world level. But I think people need to hear what local people think and what I think and what my wife also thinks. So we're going to do some articles from the Catholic Register, which I think is a good paper, and everyone probably should get it. It's a very stable paper, a very serious paper, and a very careful paper, and it reflects a lot of the things that some of the more important people in the church are saying. And there's a contrast between the article that's put out by Kim Daniels of the Catholic Social Thought and Public Life from Georgetown University. And I think that article by her, and I'm not saying it's written solely by her. She's the director of communications. There are probably other people giving input to it. But I think that article falls short, and I think the first two articles show why it does. So I'll read those a little bit and talk about those first. And then we'll go to Kim Daniels' article. I think it's important because it may be Kim Daniels' article. It may be something that you have read. I don't know, but I think, again, that it falls short, that it's misleading, and that it needs to be addressed. And so I'm going to do that today. I just felt that it was necessary and something responsible that Catholic Spirit Radio can do to make sure that you have all sides of what's going on. So we'll go from there. Is there anything that you want to mention, Lynn, before we get started?
No, I just want to tell everybody this weather this week and in the week previous and coming up in this new week doesn't look too good. So stay safe, stay in, stay warm.
That's very good advice, I think. And again, it's probably going to be next week as well. We're going to even get some more. So we're into a real Illinois winter again, Central Illinois winter, I guess. And this is January, and so it's nothing out of the order or unusual. But sometimes we get a couple of winters in a row that are nice and not like this at all. And we get sort of stuck on those and think that that's the way it's always going to be. But the weather coming up here and last weekend is telling us that's not always the way it's going to be. At any rate, let me read from the Catholic Register. And this is the issue of the 11/25th, November 25th through December 8th issue. And the headline is "A Cry of the Heart to Our Bishops, Please Restore Order to the Church." And this is by Monsignor Charles Pope. and we'll go into that a little bit here, and then another article, and then we'll go over to Miss Daniels' article, or I'm not sure, she's Mrs. Daniels, Kim Daniels' article. At any rate, it says here, in the light of the annual Fall General Assembly of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the USCCB, November 12 to 14th in Baltimore, we do well to ponder a critical work of bishops, along with priests and deacons, that of governance. Governance is suggested in the very title of the sacrament received in its fullness, the Sacrament of Holy Orders. And that's exactly, you know, what the word holy order means, sacramentum ordinate, or ordinis, I guess it's pronounced. And it suggests order, and it suggests keeping good governance in a church. So that's what this article is about. And it goes on to say, today the word ordination is reserved for the sacramental act which integrates a man into the order of bishops, presbyters, or deacons, and goes beyond a simple election, designation, delegation, or institution by the community, for it confers a gift of the Holy Spirit that permits the exercise of a sacred power. Thus, the sacrament of holy orders does speak clearly to the maintaining of order, to governance. The very word bishop in its Greek roots also indicates this. Episkopos, or episkopos, comes from the word epa, meaning upon or over, and skopos, to see or look. So they are overseers. This is what a bishop is. Therefore, a bishop is one designated to oversee a local area or diocese. Of a bishop, St. Paul writes that he must be able both to encourage with sound doctrine and to convict those contradicting it. So that's what a bishop does. He's able to encourage with sound doctrine. That's what he must be able to do. And he must convict those who are contradicting sound doctrine. For there are also many insubordinate, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. It is necessary to silence them as they overthrow whole households, teaching things that they ought not for the sake of base gain. And that comes from Paul in Titus 1:9 through 11. So to Titus, whom Paul ordained bishop in Crete, Paul wrote, the reason I left you in Crete was that you might put in order what was left unfinished and ordain priests in every town as I directed you. And that's from Titus 1:5. So hence, at the heart of the sacrament of holy orders is the keeping of order through the office of governance. Indeed, this office is part of the tightly woven triple office of Christ conferred upon bishops and priests, teaching, governing, and sanctifying. The very word hierarchy most literally means rule by priests, because it comes from the word hieros, priest, and archon, rule. So there's no getting around it. One of the essential functions of the sacrament of holy orders is the keeping of order in the church through governing, teaching, and sanctifying. So the question is, how are we in holy orders doing? And this is what Monsignor Charles Pope is asking. He's asking, how are we in holy orders doing? And he answers, by any reasonable measure, terribly. Indeed, some of the gravest disorder is to be found within the very ranks of holy orders. There is a shocking yet persistent picture of disorder, confusion, and denial up to the highest ranks, both nationally and internationally. So this article here is addressing the church not only in America, but it's also addressing the church worldwide. And he's saying there are some very shocking things that are wrong with the way the bishops are governing. This is his answer. And I think all of us understand, you know, that it's been a very, very confusing time here. And we all as lay people understand that there is confusion among bishops, confusion in the church. We're faced with a horrible scandal. And a lot of people are being disheartened by it and demoralized by it, and we need to address it. And that's what is being done here in this article. It says, there are, to be sure, notable exceptions in which holy and courageous bishops, priests, and deacons have sought to stand in the gap and heal the breach, often at great personal cost. The overall atmosphere, however, is one of unholy disorder, brought about by the very ones ordained to bring holy order. And he's saying here, the faith is openly betrayed and denied by renegade bishops, even whole conferences of bishops and heads of religious orders. Synods sow confusion and division rather than clarity or unity. He says, teaching is on holiday. And isn't that so? Don't we so much need the teaching that the church has handed down for 2,000 years? The dogma that we have handed down for 2,000 years, the doctrines that have been handed down for 2,000 years, the church certainly needs to address these things and use this to address what it's facing now.
He said, that's for sure.
Exactly. And, you know, we've always said orthodoxy is extremely important. Stick to orthodoxy. It tells you what to do and how to address every single age. Lynn and I have always said, if you want to be radical, then be orthodox. And so it goes on. It says, teaching is on holiday, silence in the face of error is rampant, and listening without limit is called magisterial. You know, it's good to listen, and we need to do that, but you can't simply just listen. You have to hear, and then you have to take action. And this is what has not been happening. And that action, as far as we're concerned, as Orthodox Catholics, that action has to be in keeping with the doctrine and teaching that your church has handed down for 2,000 years. Ambiguous euphemisms that violate Catholic anthropology, doctrine, and sacred tradition are adopted uncritically. And this is what Monsignor Pope is saying, that, again, I'll say it, ambiguous euphemisms that violate Catholic anthropology, doctrine, and sacred tradition are adopted uncritically. We've got to stop this. There are wandering celebrity priests who promote the LGBT agenda without any reference to repentance or chastity. Politics that deny the Lord's clear words on divorce, remarriage, and ignore St. Paul's admonitions about Holy Communion are proposed and adopted. Catholic colleges openly teach dissent without any correction from the bishops, and there is a tolerance of moral life among their students, and that is a huge word. We live in an age in which it seems that tolerance is the most highly valued that you can have, and tolerance is something that has been extended far, far too far.
That's for sure. If you think about the word tolerance, you have to tolerate everything.
No, a tolerance means, you know, it doesn't mean, I should say, it doesn't mean approval, and it doesn't mean permission. Tolerance means that when people make mistakes or are in error, they need to be told and corrected, but at the same time, you understand that people are human beings, that they can make errors, and that in that sense, that we do tolerate some mistakes and dissent from the norm, but in the sense that we don't come down on somebody with a cement post. On the other hand, clearly and firmly, anything that deviates from the clear teaching of the church needs to be pointed out and needs to be corrected. So this is what is going on here. It says, anyhow, there is a tolerance of moral life among their students that would shock even the most pagan of the ancient Greeks and Romans. And I don't think that this statement is overdoing it. He's saying it would shock even the most pagan of the ancient Greeks and Romans. It says, liturgical abuses have abounded and remained uncorrected for decades. In the seminaries, and here it is right here, and this is what I want to get at, because this is what I think the article I'll read from Kim Daniels of the Georgetown University, this issue right here is what I think she and that and the Catholic the whole organization, the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought, is avoiding. And here it is right here. Monsignor Pope goes on to say, in the seminaries and within the priesthood, homosexual predation by an apparent network of priests has gone on for years, along with cover-ups, denials, and secret payouts. So this is the elephant in the room that is being avoided, and I think it's avoided by that article that I will get to as we go along here. It says the number of states initiating grand jury investigations is increasing daily. Mass attendance has been declining for years, leading to the closing of numerous parishes and schools. There has been an almost complete loss of Christendom in the past 60 years, and that is true. And what we have to remember is that how we pray, the manner in which we pray, that is the liturgy, is how we believe. And how we believe is going to have a huge effect on how effective and efficacious that the church is. It's not going to be an effective church, and it's not going to be an efficacious institution unless it has clear teaching and clear rulings. And that is why there is confusion among the laity, and mass attendance has been declining, and parishes and schools are being closed. And in the West, there is a huge loss of Christendom. And Monsignor Pope here is laying it on a lack of good governance by bishops and priests as well. And we do, of course, again, want to remind people that there are a lot of good priests out there, and there are a lot of good bishops out there, and they work hard to try to correct this. But there is too much laxity and too much unwillingness to address the issues of our day and get them corrected within the church. So that's what the article is saying. Scandals continue to arise. And he goes on here, the Vatican Bank has been plagued by scandal for years. A drug-fueled homosexual orgy reportedly took place in the summer of 2017 in the apartment of a high-ranking Vatican prelate. So this issue that we are addressing here, this scandal, is connected to homosexuality, according to Monsignor Pope, and it's connected to a homosexual network in the church. And this is an issue that isn't being addressed like it should be by the bishops and by a lot of organizations in our schools, such as Georgetown and other universities, that are not addressing this issue. And the reason, I think, of course, is obvious, at least it is to me, and that is because we are supposed to tolerate this homosexuality, and people are afraid of being called names if they address the issue as a homosexual issue. And that's what's at stake, and this has to come out. The Holy Father himself, the article goes on, says he is surrounded by questionable figures who are at the very heart of the current crises. He has received credible, largely corroborated allegations by a former nuncio, and of course that's Vigano, Cardinal Vigano, that he and others knew of the illicit activities of former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. So we're going to have to stop here and take a break, and we'll come back to this. But this is the question that we're addressing, and it is not being addressed as it should be. We'll come back to that after the break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Do you listen to Catholic Spirit Radio?
I sure do.
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
Whenever I have the opportunity.
Of course I do.
Very much so.
Yes. Of course, I listen to Catholic Spirit Radio.
When do you listen to Catholic Spirit Radio?
In the morning.
Over my lunch hour.
On my way to and from work.
I listen in the car.
Usually I'm on my way to church, and I listen again on the way home.
I listen to Catholic Spirit Radio in the middle of the night when I wake up and I can't sleep.
Tell others to join the growing number of Catholic Spirit Radio listeners. You can hear them on the air, online, on the free app, and on Alexa. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Follow them on Facebook and check out the resources on their website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about the scandal, and it's something that I felt needed to be addressed, a particular issue of the scandal that isn't being addressed, and I mentioned it in the last segment, and that is the homosexual issue. And we are reading an article, and we're going to read another one from the Catholic Register, which I think is a very good newspaper, a very reliable one, and a very careful one, and one that does its homework. And so what I'm saying here is told by this newspaper. I happen to agree with it, and I wish that we weren't addressing this issue right now. We would like to get on with some other things, of course, my wife and I, and do some more interviews with people and get back to some of the ordinary things that we do. And but I felt, even though that this is a local station, a local program, people out there need to hear about this from a local point of view. And so we are going to read along the lines of the Catholic Register. And then I want to refer after that to an article written by Kim Daniels, the Associate Director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought. And I think it's a perfect example of what Monsignor Pope here is saying, and in what the next article is saying, is lacking by people, especially secular people, who are addressing this issue. But let's go on. It says, in response to the crisis from Rome, there has been silence, name-calling of those requesting investigations, and only occasionally promises to look into the matter. The faithful are dismayed by the chaos. Even prior to the current sexual and financial scandals, the general stance of this pontificate has been artfully described as weaponized ambiguity. Those are really some tough charges being made here. And the Catholic Register is airing them, and they need to be aired. We have to address these things. It says, even prior to the current sexual and financial scandals, well, I already read that, some of the most confusing and strange things have been said and done by the Pope and then left unexplained. Many of the faithful who love the Church and the Holy Father have been placed in the highly awkward position of having to openly express their dismay, sadness, and confusion. If my picture of disorder is too extreme, I beg your mercy, Monsignor Pope is saying. He says, with so many of the faithful, I am grieved that I even have to mention these things publicly. My preference has always been to remain discreet. I also repent because I am a member of the very hierarchy and cadre of those in holy orders I describe. I have been a priest for nearly 30 years now, and this disorder has only increased on my watch. I cannot exempt myself from all blame. While I have not committed any moral crimes, I have at times in the past been impatient with some of the faithful who raise concerns such as the ones I have written about today. And so he's very concerned about saying these things, and he's been very blunt, I understand that. But nevertheless, if someone like Monsignor Pope feels that these have to be aired, I feel that we have to address this issue on a local level. He said, I would often scold them for speaking against church leaders and remind them that dissenters spoke in such a way. It goes against my training and my nature as a Catholic and a priest to recite this litany of disorder. I even admit to the fear of retribution for my words. I would like to mention again that while the big picture is bleak, there are many bishops who have spoken courageously and taught well during these dark days. May they be confirmed by the Lord and preserved in their ministry. And he says, I beg the bishops to hear a cry of the heart. And he goes on, the only path forward I can reasonably see is a repentance not only of sorrow, but a strong amendment. We clergy must amend our lives by recommitting to the Lord's doctrinal and moral teaching. We must strive to live it ourselves and be serious about reproving dissenters and serial violators and removing them from our ranks. We must honestly call out sin and refer to it by its proper name. And this is what I think that we're not doing, and this is where I think the article that I'm going to read later on here by Kim Daniels falls short. We must speak no less plainly than did our Lord and his apostles, who used words like sodomy, fornication, adultery, greed, hatred, divorce, and heresy. In other words, these things that we're addressing in the church are not new. They were around since the time of Christ, and he had no compunctions about addressing them openly and honestly. And Monsignor Pope goes on and he says, resorting to vague terms, and I want everyone out there to hear this, resorting to vague terms like woundedness, clericalism, and abuse of power only diminishes our credibility. People can see right through such obfuscation. People can see right through such obfuscation. And it's true. These words, woundedness, clericalism, abuse of power, and so forth, are covering over, in generalized terms, the specific issues such as homosexuality and the very possibility and probability of a homosexual network in the church. We're covering these over, and I think as we'll get to that article by Kim Daniels, we'll see that that's the case there. It says, however, we who share in the sacrament of holy orders are currently presiding over a landscape of terrible disorder and have no one to blame but ourselves. We must change. Indeed, we must seek a remarkable transformation. May we who share in the exalted sacrament of holy orders by God's grace restore order to the Lord's church. And then he signs it, Monsignor Charles Pope. And he is a priest of the Archdiocese of Washington. And I called him cardinal earlier, and that was a mistake. He's not a cardinal, but he's a priest. And I give him a lot of credit for his courage. And I give credit to the Catholic Register for printing the article. And there are more and more articles. I can't read them all. More and more are coming out in the Register with these stories, addressing these issues. And I think that has to be heard by the people here in central Illinois that we broadcast to. So, and then there is another article here, and this article is by sociologist Father Paul Sullins. It's also in the Catholic Register in the same issue, the November 25th through December 8th, and is clergy sex abuse related to homosexual priests? And he goes on November 2nd, the Ruth Institute published a new report that dares to ask a question many researchers and Catholics have been afraid to ask. What has been the role of active homosexuality and homosexual subcultures in the priesthood and in the seminaries on the sex abuse crisis? So that's the question we have to face. The report, which indicates a very strong correlation between homosexual priests and homosexual subcultures and the incidence of clergy sexual abuse, is in part a response to the two important studies commissioned by the U.S. bishops in the face of the sex abuse crisis that were conducted by the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. The 2004 study was entitled The Nature and Scope of the Problem of Sexual Abuse of Minors by Catholic Priests and Deacons in the United States. And the 2011 report was called The Causes and Context of Sexual Abuse of Minors by Catholic Priests in the United States, 1950 to 2010. The 2011 report was heavily criticized at the time of its release for its assertion that it found no evidence that homosexual priests were to blame for the abuse crisis, despite the fact that more than 80% of the victims were male and that 78% were post-pubescent. Critics, it goes on to say, let me get over here to the last page of the article. It says, critics claim that the report bowed to political correctness and fear of a black backlash in academia. 7 years on, the Ruth Institute has weighed into the research of the sex abuse crisis, specifically addressing the issue of homosexuality. A global nonprofit organization, the Ruth Institute, was founded by Jennifer Robach Morse, Ph.D., to help study and find solutions to the toxic impact of the sexual revolution. The new report was the work of Father Paul D. Sullins, Ph.D., a research associate of the Ruth Institute. Father Sullins spoke to the Register senior editor Matthew Bunsen about this report on October 31st. And so here is Father Paul D. Sullins' answers to the questions concerning this issue. Why do you feel that this type of study is so long overdue? And Father Sullins answers, there is a widespread denial of any possible negative effects of homosexual activity or any findings that might not be benign for homosexual persons in the scholarly realm. There is. There is a huge bias that somehow or another, any criticism whatsoever of homosexuality is unfair or unjust or intolerant, and that's got to stop. There's not been a willingness, Father Sullins goes on, to confront the evidence on this topic. He says, we have found in the last 6 months there is a possibility that bishops have not pursued a wide knowledge on this topic. And they haven't. And I think the article that I'm going to get to by Kim Daniels of the Georgetown bears that out. It says, some have called it a cover-up, but there is evidence that there's a lack of energy, at least, or interest in finding out the relation of homosexuality to this activity. That is, the activity of finding out more knowledge about the abuse topic. When you read the John Jay report, when it first came out, what was your initial reaction to it? And this is another question asked by the Catholic Register. And Father Sullins answers. He goes, I have read both the John Jay reports recently. We should say John Jay came out with a report in 2004 on the nature and scope of the abuse and followed that up in 2011 with a great study on the causes and context of the abuse. What I take issue with is the conclusion that the abuse was unrelated to the presence of homosexual men in the priesthood over the period of abuse. So Father Sullins here is taking issue with the John Jay report that denied that there was a connection there. He goes on, the John Jay report in 2011 denied that that was the case because they said that the trend of abuse did not correspond with the trend of homosexual men in the priesthood. So that abuse was highest in the mid-1970s, but the reports of homosexual activity in the seminaries did not increase until the 1980s. So, they argued, that since by the time we were aware that they had these kinds of lurid homosexual cultures and homosexual activities in the Catholic seminaries, the abuse was already declining. And so, it couldn't have had anything to do with that activity or with the presence of homosexuals. And he says, and so I critically examine that thesis. I really don't have a general criticism of the John Jay study at all. In fact, I have a lot of appreciation and admiration for that study. But for that particular point, I point out that the percent of homosexual men who are ordained in any year or the presence of homosexual activity in the seminaries can't relate very strongly to the percent of homosexual priests in the priesthood. Because each year, we ordain a relatively small proportion of new priests. It's about 1%. So even if all of that 1% were homosexual, it doesn't affect the percent of homosexual men and the priesthood very much at all. So he's saying the study is skewed on account of that. In other words, the study is wrong on account of that. It says what we have to do is to look at what percentage of men were of a homosexual orientation in the entire presbyteriate in any given year in order to see if that is correlated with the incidence of abuse. And he goes on. In the 1950s, about 3% of priests were of homosexual orientation by their own reports. By the 1980s, that had risen to over 16%. So we have a sort of fivefold increase in the percentage of priests who are homosexual in a pretty straight line from the 1950s through the 1980s. And that certainly reflects the trend that our nation has gone on in approving of and normalizing homosexual activity. And he goes, and we have a very similar increase in abuse incidents over that same period. So we had a fivefold increase in homosexuality from the 1950s through the 1980s, and we've had about a fivefold increase in abuse incidents. So there is a very strong correlation there, unlike what the John Jay report said. So my conclusion, Father Sullins says, has to be the opposite of that of the John Jay report. And the Catholic Register goes on with another question. It's almost axiomatic among a number of very prominent figures in the Church that there is no correlation, and they cite the John Jay report. And then we can add to that, anyone who tries to investigate that type of correlation is often accused of either scapegoating homosexual priests or of outright homophobia. And there goes the name-calling, and we got plenty of it in our culture today. Anyone who disagrees with the zeitgeist of the day, the cultural norms of the day, is shamed and called names, even though they're just reporting facts. So they asked Father Sullins, what is your response to that? And he says, I would say that if it's a choice between being called homophobic and allowing more young boys to be abused, I would choose to be at risk for being called homophobic. And I think that is a very, very good choice. He goes, I'm not hateful toward anyone, to my knowledge. He says, I do look at the influence of these homosexual subcultures in seminaries in encouraging and promoting abuse. And I find that it explains about half of the high correlation of the abuse with the percentage of homosexual priests. My experience in studying homosexuals has been this, that to people who hate the truth looks like hate. And that's exactly it. When people come out stating the facts and stating the truth, they're called hateful names because people who want to disagree with the truth find the truth hateful. And then the Catholic Register goes on. You mentioned in your research that there is a presence of a homosexual subculture in a lot of U.S. seminaries. What needs to be done, in your view, with respect to seminaries in order to address this problem? And he goes on, he says, well, the first thing that needs to be done is to stop the denial. And that's what we have. We need to recognize that there's a problem. And he goes, how many times do we want to go around this block again and keep denying what is becoming increasingly obvious and taking steps to address it? So there we have some things that need to be addressed. Homosexuality and a possible homosexual network in the church needs to be addressed. And we have to start addressing denial to that effect. We also have to start addressing the issue of calling all of these things clericalism, or calling all of these things by the broad name of abuse, and generalize these things as well. So we need to stop this kind of generalization and doing these kind of things. And that is the issue that I'm going to address when we get over to this article by Kim Daniels. So bear with me. We're going to stop here and take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Morning Glory. It's Catholic from coast to coast.
God doesn't send anybody to hell. We choose hell. What God is doing is allowing our free will choice. He never wants us to say no. He always wants us to be in love with him. And people need to understand, after we die, you only got two choices, heaven or hell.
Beauty.
Smoking or non-smoking.
Exactly.
Morning Glory with Gloria Purvis, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, and the Morning Glory team.
Monday through Saturday at 6 a.m. on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM, 92.5 FM, and also 88.3 FM up in Pontiac. And we're talking about the abuse scandal. And I read from a couple of articles, one by Father Sullins, a sociologist, who disagrees with the idea that homosexuality is not one of the root causes of the abuse scandal, and also an article from Monsignor Pope, who the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., who faults the bishops himself and other bishops who are not addressing this problem as they should be. And we're going to talk also here about an article by Kim Daniels, Associate Director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought and Public Life at Georgetown University, and a member of the Vatican Dicastery for Communication. And the reason that I want to talk about that article is because from the articles I just read, I think they show so much how this article by Kim Daniels avoids the very things and the very issues that they say have to be addressed, and uses some of the very generalized terms that this article says that are simply terms that people are hiding behind, and that this kind of generalization and this kind of miscommunication or denial has to stop. So the article from Kim Daniels is entitled The Four Waves of the Abuse Crisis. And she goes on, talks about right away, she says, this latest iteration of the clerical abuse crisis began with revelations regarding Cardinal Theodore McCarrick's abuse of children and predation on seminarians as he was protected by a culture of clericalism that looked the other way at every turn. So there it is, right from the very beginning. Kim is pointing out that the culture of clericalism is one of the main reasons for this scandal. And that simply isn't true. It might be a reason. There isn't any doubt that there can be clericalism in which the clerics of the, you know, the institution of the priesthood and the bishops and so forth try to protect their own organizations. But the fact is that it's the abuse crisis is being caused by a denial of some of the important things that are actually causing it. And so this referral, again, to clericalism is what Monsignor Pope said has to be addressed, that this is a diversion and that it's a denial and that people can see through it and we have to quit using it. And so her article uses it repeatedly. And he goes, she talks about the Pennsylvania grand jury report, and she says that report alleged that Cardinal Donald Wuerl of Washington, D.C., long seen as a leader on these issues, had himself permitted accused priests to be reassigned, and this October, Pope Francis accepted Cardinal Wuerl's resignation. And she goes on, she goes, church leaders failed in their most basic duty to protect the vulnerable. And that's another issue that is being used, in my opinion, as sort of a cover up. Yes, there are vulnerable, and I think the church has done a very good job from 2002 on to protect the vulnerable in the church, not only in the United States, but in other countries as well. But it is not just protecting the vulnerable that is an issue. The vulnerable to what? And that is what's being avoided here. And, of course, the vulnerable to homosexuality. That's what's been reported by both Father Sullins and also by Monsignor Pope. And she goes on, into this volatile context, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano launched several letters raising questions about who knew what and when regarding Cardinal McCarrick, and all amid unsupported, scattershot accusations, allegations of conspiracy, and a call for Pope Francis's resignation, using the burgeoning abuse crisis as a vehicle to advance his own agendas. And she leaves that drop here. She doesn't go on to say what these unsupported, scattershot accusations are. She doesn't say why they're unsupported. She doesn't talk about allegations of conspiracy and address that issue. Archbishop Vigano did do something that seems very reckless, calling for Pope Francis's resignation. But the point is that she uses the term into this volatile context as if somehow or another Archbishop Vigano should have been silent because the context was volatile. But who and what caused that volatile context, Kim Daniels does not address. So the question is that why is Cardinal Maria Vigano following some kind of advancing his own agenda? And what is that agenda? Again, Kim Daniels doesn't say. According to Pope, Monsignor Pope, Vigano was a courageous person. And that is the same according to many other articles that are starting to come out now, that Cardinal Vigano didn't have anything to gain by doing this and a lot to lose, but he did it anyway because he feels in his conscience that it's a necessary thing to do, and this isn't addressed. This little paragraph here is sort of dropped, in other words, and just leaves it as if somehow all of this has been proven when it hasn't been proven.
That's the one paragraph in that whole article that really upset me.
Yeah. It does, because it just drops it and leaves it there.
Makes an accusation, and she doesn't back it up.
And then, yeah, she goes on. And then it just leaves this sitting, and it moves on. So I'll get on to some of the other things that she does say. And let's see here. She goes on, and she says, she talks about the Philadelphia Inquirer, which found that more than 130 U.S. bishops have been accused of failing to respond adequately to clerical sexual misconduct. That's true. They have. But she doesn't say what that sexual misconduct is. And she goes, 50 of them after the adoption of the 2002 Dallas Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People. But the fact is, as the wave of abuse, as she calls it this time, isn't so much against children and young people as it is against actually adult seminarians in the seminaries. A lot of it is part of that. And she goes on, finally, we saw a meeting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that opened with an announcement that the Vatican had determined that the proposals under discussion by the U.S. bishops had a number of problems that meant they could not be put to vote. And so the bishops who were addressing a problem that was a local problem, that is in the United States at least, not worldwide, and what they should do to address this problem better, that was stopped by the Pope. And she goes on to say, what she means by that, I don't exactly know. She says, the bishops gathered in Baltimore, had some fruitful discussions, but came to no real conclusions. But she just said in the earlier part of the article that they were stopped by the Pope, which is true. Now, why the Pope stopped that, we can speculate. But the point is that, of course, they came to no real conclusions. How could they? They were told to wait, and so they're waiting till February. Again, this is being put off. So it says, they came to no real conclusions, leaving many to wonder why so many bishops seem more concerned with their rights and privileges than with their responsibilities. Again, this is an accusation of clericalism, that the bishops are concerned with their own rank and that their own numbers and their own people rather than with their responsibilities. Some of that may be true, but the point is that it isn't hard to wonder why they didn't come to any conclusions when they were stopped from coming to any conclusions. So it seems a little bit unfair here to the bishops. And then she goes, American Catholics arrive at this moment with anguish in our hearts for the victims and survivors of sexual abuse and anger at our leaders who we trusted to prevent these horrific crimes. Again, this is constantly emphasizing somehow or another that the victims are children or people who are in positions are unable to defend themselves. But that's not what this abuse is about only this time. And that's not being addressed here. She goes, as we try to think through a path forward in response to this crisis, answers are beginning to coalesce around leadership from faithful, engaged laity, working together with bishops, priests, and religious to protect children and vulnerable adults, secure justice and healing for survivors, provide real accountability for bishops and genuine transparency regarding cases of abuse and cover-up. But again, all of these things are good. But again, here's this regarding cases of abuse. What kind of abuse? According to Sullins and according to Monsignor Pope, it's homosexual abuse and it's a homosexual network in the church, and that's not being addressed here. Genuine transparency? It seems that the genuine transparency is lacking in this article. Of course we want to protect children and vulnerable adults, but from what? Of course we want to secure justice and healing for survivors. Then it goes on, including zero tolerance of abuse. But the fact is that zero tolerance of abuse, you have to go to the source of the abuse, and that's what's being avoided. What is the source of the abuse? And then finally it says, reform the clerical culture. Again, there's the blaming on the clerical culture. So that its abuse and its cover-up can never happen again. Well, how are you going to reform the clerical culture? There is nothing said. What does she mean by that? Doesn't say. The fact is that the problem of homosexuality that's been addressed by these two other people is not being addressed here. She goes, we need a revitalized understanding of the radical claims that the gospel of Jesus Christ makes on us and of what it means to walk together as a church on a path forward. Well, what does exactly that mean? That is pretty general. What are the radical claims of the gospel? And how do they apply, for example, to homosexuality? It's not said here. As Pope Francis said in his letter to the people of God, halt before the sufferings of the innocent, without excuses or cowardice, to discover the model of a true follower of Christ. All well and very good, but that's pretty general. What does that exactly mean, and who does it apply to? Just clericalism? So then she goes on, how we got here. The clerical abuse crisis in the Catholic Church simmered for decades. I don't know what she means by simmered for decades. And what is the clerical abuse crisis? Doesn't say. What does it stem from? Doesn't say. And then it goes, litigation regarding abuse in the U.S. goes back to the 19th century. Again, all well and good. But why take us back to the 19th century? Of course there have been cases. And civil claims were settled throughout the 20th century. but they were seen as isolated cases. Well, maybe so. But again, it seems like a diversion from the actual issue at hand. Some have divided the clerical sexual abuse in the U.S. into three waves and so on. But what? Isolated waves of what? She doesn't say here. She goes on to talk about the first wave, and then she goes on to talk about a specific predator and that kind of thing. There's a lot in here that all talks about incidences that happened years ago and specific incidents and specific people without ever addressing anything. Then she goes on and she keeps on using the word the issue. Well, what is the issue? Is it just abuse? What is abuse? And she goes on that Chicago was the first diocese to establish an office for the protection of children and youth. Well and good. But the fact is that we can see from what happened in the last crisis that simply the protection of children and youth is not addressing this crisis. Then she goes on and talks about the third wave. And then again, she talks about the sexual abuse of children, as if this is something only a pedophilia. By 2004, she goes on, the Globe had written some 800 articles on the scandal, all well and good. And she goes, more than 500 victims had filed abuse claims. Victims of what? Sexual abuse? And then she goes on to talk more about children. After that, she goes on to talk about healing, that the charter required us to talk about healing for the people, make a prompt and effective response to abuse allegations. Well, you can respond to abuse allegations, but if you're going to stem a disease, you go to the source. There's no mention of a source here. Create a safe environment for children and young people through training and screening. Training and screening for what? Is this going to be screening more lay people? No, this is not a lay issue. It's not a lay people. There may be some of that, but the fact is that's not what the real issue is. Then she goes on to talk about abuse and its cover-up. What the hell is abuse? I'm sorry for the word, but I'm getting a little tired of this. And it goes, we just began a fourth wave of clerical abuse, beginning with the revelations concerning Cardinal McCarrick. But what are those revelations? And a U.S. bishops meeting that began with a promise to unite. Now listen to this. A U.S. bishops meeting that began with a promise to unite around real solutions, only to end with little show except discussion of a number of draft proposals. But the fact is that bishops meeting was told to stop. It was called off by the Pope. And now this article sort of seems to suggest that somehow it's the fault of the bishops that they didn't come up with some kind of solutions. Solutions to what is the question. And then she goes on finding a path forward. Abuse rose through the hierarchy with denial, concealment, and wrongful behavior. The same thing over and over, just said in different ways. The article really isn't communicating much at all. It goes on and on and on, and it generalizes. And if I sound a little bit, frustrated and so forth, it's because I am, and I'm very dissatisfied with this article. And she goes on, it is not the fault of the secular media. Well, who said it was? Without whom we would not know the full scope of clerical sexual abuse and its cover-up. This seems to be sort of an introduction to somehow or another transfer this over to secular experts that should handle this crisis rather than the church and the bishops themselves. Because she goes on, help our church move forward. Move forward how? Groups like the Leadership Roundtable and others are helping to bring the expertise of lay people to the table. But she goes on, respected journalists are continuing to pursue these important stories. And she mentions respected professional journalists. Well, who are these respected professional journalists? And how are they more adequate, let's say, than the lay people like myself and others who seem to understand what this real issue is? And she goes, and when it comes to the media, reporters have, by and large, done Catholics an important service whose value should not be discounted. Well, they expose the situation, but the fact is that she's not very specific about what that valuable service is. She goes on again to talk about Cardinal McCarrick's behavior. Well, what is his behavior? What do we call it? Got a name for it? And then she goes, all are eager for the February 21st to 24 meeting of the Episcopal Conference. The Vatican has signaled that the bishops will engage with victim survivors and consider the role of laity in securing the protection of children and justice for victim survivors. Well, we've already got in place a protection for victims and survivors and healing and all of that kind of thing. So it's the same old story. And then she goes on and she says, the bishops will begin considering structural reforms of the church to root out the culture of clericalism. Well, what is that structural reform? And then she goes on and talks about we have to be careful regarding true and false reform. Well, what's true reform? Does she know? Or does the Georgetown Institute know? And finally, she says about using this issue to rebuild institutional integrity. And she goes on to talk about ecclesiastical and social change that we so greatly need. Well, what is the ecclesiastical? It sounds as if this is a springboard to jump in to a plan by the lay and secular media and other people to change the actual institutions of the church. So again, I can't go on here. I'm running out of time, but I find the article has a lot of shortcomings and I find it very misleading. And I think if you read that article and think about it, you'll see that we need a lot more specifics than that. So we're going to have to stop here. And I hope you enjoyed the program and got information out of it that we need. And it keeps your mind opened up to some specific things that need to be addressed rather than this broad generalization. So with that, we'll end our program. And St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen. We'll see you next week. Again, God bless everybody out there. You pray for us, we'll pray for you.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.